CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal.
You are listening to CJLO News. Dozens of tenants in NDG are still waiting for information after being evacuated from their homes over a week ago. 15 units in a building on Old Orchard Avenue at the corner of Monkland Avenue were evacuated with only 12 hours' notice after city officials ordered a preventative evacuation over safety issues in the building. Inspection reports show that the company owning the building, Alfaco Management Inc., was made aware of structural issues back in November of 2025. Now, dozens of tenants are in limbo, waiting to hear from Alfaco Inc. about when they are able to re-enter their units or even simply retrieve their belongings. Many tenants are staying at the Evo Temporary Residence Building. Others are housed with family and friends. The evacuation took place during extreme cold temperatures last week. Days before evacuation, multiple residents reported heating had gone out during the cold snap. CJLO connected with two tenants from the building, Claire Anderson and her partner Tony Golem. They're staying with family now. They say they're unsatisfied with correspondence from Alfaco Management Inc.
We've been hearing a bit from the city. We've heard nothing really from the owners of the building. We know us and other tenants have reached out multiple times, done follow-ups, calls, emails, texts. Nothing is really getting resolved. We have no timeline, no answers. And I think whenever we do reach out, we're either not getting a response or the response we get is very generic and vague and not answering any of the questions.
But tenants say where Alfaco has been lacking, the city is filling some gaps. They received consolation from NDG's interim mayor, Sonny Morose, who also informed them that Alfaco should be one of the responsible parties for assisting tenants with housing needs. The building is said to be under investigation from the city and undergoing repairs from the company.
They had messaged us letting us know it was the landlord that should be the one taking care of this situation right now. But again, since we're not hearing anything from them, there's not much we could do.
NDG's interim mayor, Sonny Morose, says the evacuation needed to take place.
We didn't take this decision lightly and that we always want to put the safety and security of our residents first.
In an email, city spokesperson Etienne Brunet said an inspection had highlighted, quote, several structural problems, unquote, that confirmed the need for rapid action. She gave no timeline of when residents are allowed back in the building. At the time of this report, Alfaco has not responded to CJLO's request to put someone up for an interview. Alfaco Management Inc. has owned the building since May of 2025. The inspection firm, ORTAM, was hired to inspect the building and reported to Alfaco that the building's conditions were critical and that evacuation needed to take place. That was back on November 3rd. For CJLO News, I'm Adam Innes.
Hi, you're listening to Dreamscapes on CJLO, and this is why I never announce who the guest is ahead of time, because when I do it, even if I say it's a mystery guest, things don't go the way that I think they should. So that's okay. That's part of live radio with live interviews. So I'm not going to say if we're having a guest today or not, because I'm not going to jinx it. We'll see. We'll just have to see, okay? There's suspense today. But last week I got to do an interview with Cam and with Jade, which was great. I should say Jade, not of Dreamscapes, Jade of CJLO, because there's two different Jades. Let's start off with a song. That could be good, right? That's not what I wanted to do. How about this song? Okay. We're going to listen to some Sasha Kay, and then I'm going to come back with a moon report and maybe eventually a guest. We'll see.
Thank you. Esteja alerta para as regras dos três. O que você dá retornará para você. Essa lição você tem que aprender. Você só ganha o que você merece. We'll be right back.
tired of your
radio
making you angry, then behold.
CJLO 1690 AM.
Stick 83
genres.
Whatever you want.
Twee, calypso, crunk.
Whatever. Into this
radio station.
And she will melt them all together into one delicious
radio station.
Never again will you have to suffer through the bread part of your
radio station.
I give you
CJLO 1690 radio
is station. The new bread. Uh-huh.
Me and Mrs. Jones, we got a thing going on.
Good morning. Sorry to break up your ad break, but this is Death of the Mid-Range, your future favorite NBA talk show. We help you start off your week right every Monday morning at 9 a.m., bringing you a diversity of episodes on the beautiful sport of basketball. All of this is, of course, on CJLO. We will see you there.
Tavern Tour is back. From February 12th to 14th, more than 100 artists from here and abroad will be taking over the bars on Avenue Montreal, Boulevard Saint Laurent, and Rue Saint Denis. See Proto Martyr, Cap Bambino, Christopher Owens, The Mystery Lights, Lydia Lunch and Mark Hurtado, Sean Nicholas Savage, Emma Becco, Fax, Camilla Sparks, and more. See the full program and get your tickets online at taverntour.ca, a SiriusXM presentation.
Hi, you are listening to Dreamscapes.
Yay!
Yes, and we're here with Maxwell.
Yes, that's my name.
My mystery guest.
Yes, I'm a mystery guest rolling in through the fog.
It's the second time that you've been on Dreamscapes.
Yeah, theoretically the third, since 2 weeks ago I came in.
That's true. Yeah, we can't discount that. And so this time it's just you and me. The last time I think we had all of the Dreamscapers on at the same time. Is that possible? Or at least with Jade.
Oh, yes, with Jade. And then last week it was Jasper's episode, the two weeks ago.
Exactly, yeah. So we can get to the... I have Jade Melody news because I found a musician Melody Jade, which is from your last.
And she's
dream.
A Quebecer, no?
Yes, she might live. She might be from Gatineau. Wow. Like, we don't know.
Wow.
So, anyways, maybe we'll have to listen to her music. But you have a new dream for us.
Yes, it's theoretically a new dream. This is actually a childhood dream that persisted, and every once in a while. I'll be dreaming. Oh, Cam's just coming in to take out the trash. Classic paid salaried employee stuff.
Right. Yeah.
This is actually a dream that I had like a bunch as a kid. As a kid, I mean like probably mid to late high school. But it's of me as almost like a child. Like in this dream, I'm in like middle school or something.
Okay.
And then every once in a while now, I'll be dreaming. And when I'm dreaming, I do like a subtle lucid dream where I'll start thinking in the dream about the other dreams I've had, and this dream will come up and take over.
Okay. So what is this dream?
Okay, I'll go through. This is the scene. It's a very brief scene that I always linger within for a while. And the scene is that it's the end of the world, and by the end of the world, let me paint a picture.
I want to hear the picture.
We're in a city with skyscrapers. Me and my best childhood best friend, Stephanie, we're in a super tall building with the windows completely broken out. You know, those big skyscrapers where the walls are just glass. Mm-hmm. It's completely blown out, so it's just a big fall to the street. And all along the street, it's just these skyscrapers with their windows blown out. And everything has this dusty orange hue, like when, like after like a meteor has dropped or something. The sky is orange. Everything is fogged with debris. And we're way high up in this building. And we're listening to the radio, the like emergency broadcast radio on some sort of ham device that is saying like, okay, there's like 5-7 minutes until the final meteor hits and then it's all over. And so we're playing the best tunes of the lifetime because it's about to all end. And the radio says, you know, okay, 5 minutes to go, 3 minutes to go. And at the 3 minute mark, Stephanie looks at me and says, and I'm with you. And there's so much sauce on the you, like, I'm with you. And for the rest of the end of the world, we just sit there in silence, and I don't say a single thing. And I just take in that statement, and then I'm annihilated. Both of us.
Okay.
Really great, fun dream that brings levity to every situation.
Yeah.
And so nowadays I'll be dreaming and this dream will pop into my head and then it'll take over the dream. And I'm like, okay, that was actually what I was doing before. That was just daydreaming because actually I'm a child. The future hasn't happened and the world is about to end and my best friend hates me.
Okay. Because that helps me understand the because I was like, what does that mean? I'm with you. Like, what is that? Like, what? Like, but now I understand.
Oh, it's negative.
She's like, why am I stuck here with you? I could be okay. I feel like, I don't know if it's like in other conversations or in the last episode that you were on, but I feel like I know a little bit about Stephanie. We don't need to go into.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, but and so I'm just trying to place like so that I know that's like a long-term friend that you've had.
Oh yeah, since kindergarten. And then we started falling apart towards COVID, and once we fell out of school, we just didn't see each other that much anymore. And now it's just like a text every once in a while.
Okay, but that was like a major friendship for you.
Oh yeah, Stephanie was my only my main friend from kindergarten to like the end of middle school or something.
Okay, yeah. So important figure in your life.
Absolutely.
And do you know what music you were hearing on the radio?
It was like old timey, like the kind of stuff I play at the start of my show Sundays at 9 a.m. by the way.
Right, that's true. I should
REVC.
Yeah, REVC.
It was like old timey, like what you would find on the Goodfellas soundtrack, like some big band with a female vocalist. Like you could hear it in Mulholland Drive.
Okay.
Like it's like some real like, okay, we're going to enjoy what humanity made. Like we're looking back 70 years.
And the sky is all orange and
dusty and foggy.
The glass is broken.
Yeah, it's so foggy you can't even really see past like the end of the block.
So apocalypse dreams, I feel like those happen. People have those, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I guess, okay, so now, because there's a whole other layer to this, which is that you keep going back into the dream in other dreams.
Yeah, that
okay,
is
so
like a big...
Walk me through that.
That I feel like that happens every once in a while. Well, I'll say this, is that often in dreams, I wake up. I have a wake-up moment in the dream where I wake up. Like, we talked about that the other week with the turtle dream.
Right.
A lot of dreams start with me kind of like waking up, looking at my phone as if I'm no longer in the dream, right?
Right.
And so this dream kind of will sometimes take over that space where I'll wake up and I'm in this apocalyptic apartment type office building. And it's like, oh, that was the dream what I was dreaming before. And now this is like actually what my reality is.
So you wake up from the apocalypse dream, but you're in the apocalypse world, or you wake up from whatever dream you're having?
I wake up from whatever other dream. I'll wake up from the Melody J dream. I'll wake up from whatever random dream I'm having about flying over the ocean to become, oh, the actual real world that I'm in is that I'm in this office building with Stephanie.
And you're little. You're young.
Yes. I'm in like middle school. Yes.
Okay. And how do you feel in the dream?
Terrible. Yeah. Everything feels
what
terrible.
A dumb question,
it's like hopelessness, like an absolute futility. Because it's like, okay, we're just in here. Don't know if there's a way down to the street. Don't know if there's anywhere else to go. But it doesn't even matter if there's another place to go because there's like 5-3 minutes until it's all over.
And also, like, she's not happy to. She's not like, at least we get to hang out and...
Yeah, no, she's not like, oh, at least I'm with my best friend before the world ends. It's like, I'm with you.
Okay, yeah.
And the what always stays is that it's, and I'm with you. It's like we're listening to the radio and she's finishing the sentence like 5 minutes until the meteor hits. And I'm with you.
Yeah. So this is a dream. So what do you think this dream is about, Maxwell? Like, what is your feeling about it?
My feeling is, I mean, futility in the face of inevitability, sort of. That's definitely what I get. I mean, also, in general, I feel like it sources from a lack of confidence in that friendship for whatever reason, which is the interesting thing about it, is that that friendship was so developed and so established, even at the time that I was starting to have that dream, that I would really have no reason to pick her over anyone else, especially for someone who like chooses to not want to be with you. You know, part of me, when I think about it, I'm like, why isn't it like a romantic partner or something? Why isn't it someone who, you know, I've chose to be in my life more so than like a childhood friend? But it's like, the more I think about it, it's like, okay, this is a person who inherently knows maybe at that time like deeper parts of me than I would even know because the amount of time we spent together. Would this, and then this person who theoretically knows me front to back is like, I don't even want to be with you when I'm about to die, when everyone's about to die.
Yeah, no, brutal. And it's also so middle school too. It's also like so petty and like,
it's very like drama. Like I've been watching a lot of Pretty Little Liars, and it feels like something straight out of Pretty Little Liars where someone would have a dream. And you know, also I feel like a really important part of the dream is that like, we're the only two people like even visible. It's like we're listening to this voice on the radio, but like there's no one in the street. There's no one in the other, you know, office complexes, this in this huge skyscraper street in whatever vague city, maybe Philly, maybe whatever. It's like this is just, it's like we're, even now we're the only two people in this world listening to some AM broadcast from however far away, telling us this stuff. And it's like, oh, it's just us right now. Right now, all we have is each other, and you're not even satisfied that you have me.
It's so mean. It's just so mean. I just, I don't, I feel like I can't even like go into the symbolism of it, because it just, on it, just the whole surface level of it is just, the whole premise is just, it just sounds so much like stuff that happens when like middle school is what, because in Quebec we don't have, it's like you're 13, 14 years old.
This would be in the dream. I would say we're like 11.
Oh
11,
yeah, no,
12.
It's 5, 6, 7.
In the States it's you're in elementary school from kindergarten until fifth grade, right, which is 10, and so then middle school is 11 to 13.
Okay.
And then you start high school at 14.
Yeah, which makes so much more sense than here, because here I was 12 when I went into high school. And this, I'm okay, I'll share this with you, because like my experience of being that age was that like, so I left my elementary school, I went into high school, and I just cried the first day, because it was like I was a 12-year-old who was in the same school as a bunch of 17-year-olds, right? And I was like,
yeah, it's
this
way
is
different.
This is overwhelming. And actually at my elementary school, we were connected to a high school, and I was terrified of the high school students. I was terrified because, anyways, we don't have to go into all of my
traumas. when I lived in Chicago, I went to a K-12,
okay,
where it's kindergarten, it's elementary, middle, and high school all in one school.
Yeah,
it's a very daunting sort of space. You're really in like in the stream. It feels like you're like a fish fighting for some kibble.
It's really like parts of it were good, because I felt like in the elementary school range I had like other people in my family who were at the school that I could see, like that were, so if it had been separated into middle school, and but I felt like the high school students, I was terrified of them.
Yeah.
And even if they were trying to be nice to me, I was terrified of them. And I know that like my dad would drop us off sometimes and be playing like really weird music really loud, and then the high school students would respond to that, and I'd be like, I can't believe like my dad is playing like whatever weird stuff he was into at the time, and they'd be like dancing, and I was like, my dad was like, see, they like, and I was like, they are making fun of us. You don't understand what you're doing.
And hey, that's still a form of fun.
It is. Oh, I mean, for my dad, he loves that stuff.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
Like, but I don't know, like he was into Tuvan throat singing. Like,
oh, yeah.
So, like, I'm not saying, like, weird. I'm saying, like, really, like, expansive in terms of what the eccentricity was. So that's my experience with high school students as an elementary student. And then, no, so then I was, so I cried, and there was, like, a bunch of other people who were crying, and they put us all in the vestibule of the high school. They were like, okay, all of you girls who are crying, it was a bunch of girls who were crying, they were like, you're gonna just sit here in the hallway until you can stop crying.
Yeah, cry it out.
Yeah, we had to cry it out. So then I became friends with the crying
wow.
group. Yeah, people who like were just overstimulated and overwhelmed and just like, I don't think I can do this.
Yeah.
We bonded. But no, so I feel like that age range is brutal. And it's also brutal because like you are trying to like, relationships are so important, right? They're always important.
Everything. Your friendships are your identity at that age.
It's everything. Yeah. So like who you're friends with and how well your friendships are going, and like that's huge. And actually, when I'm thinking about like what you're saying about Stephanie being your friend since kindergarten, I was with my friend since kindergarten in my elementary school. And then I went to high school. She went to a different high school.
Oh, that's the worst.
So that was hard for me. Yeah. So I think like there was that too, that like, I don't know.
That like abandonment.
Yeah. Like I didn't have, maybe you want to share how you became friends. Do you remember how you became friends with Stephanie?
Yeah, I was trading Pokemon cards on the bus.
Amazing.
Yeah, I remember that I lied and said that Magikarp was the best card. And I got a pretty sweet deal trading the Magikarp for something else. I don't even remember.
That you were trading with her.
Yes, exactly. And I remember that she thought I was so cool that I knew the values of the different Pokemon cards.
Incredible.
And so, yeah, we became friends through that. I think I literally remember saying something like, I think she only had like 5 Pokemon cards at the time or something. And I said something to her that was like, I'm only friends with people. I was a very mean child. And I said something like,
tell me more. Okay.
I was a very, there's a lot of stories about me being a bully as a very small child, but she, as she only had like 5 cards. And I said, I can only be friends with people who have at least like a dozen cards or something. So I was like, I'm going to trade you this really, really good card and then go home and get more Pokemon cards so we could actually play.
Wow. Okay. So you like, you kind of set
her. I was mean. And you know, thinking back, like, I wonder how motivated I was to even make friends because I was being so cruel. And wow. Stephanie was the one that I get, you know, this is so hazy in my memory now, but was I guess the one who really made that connection and was like, okay, we're going to be friends because this guy is so cool. He knows about Pokemon cards.
Which you did know about them, but
I suppose.
Yeah.
In a backhanded way.
You set it up so that she wanted to gain your approval.
Yeah, it was a bit manipulative.
It was
a little bit of a Don Draper move, you know, trying to be like, yeah, I'm only friends with people who have a dozen and really know their Pokemon stuff.
That's so funny. That's different than how I remember with my friend that I've been friends with since I'm 5. What I remember was that we started off kindergarten. Like the first day I was there, and of course it's my dad that's bringing me to school with my brother, and we make an entrance because it's with my dad and he has a cowboy hat. And anyways, so he's being weird. I show up, I'm like trying to just get in line. And so she's like, oh, like she's being, this person is who's going to become my friend for my whole life is being nice to me. But then like within the first week of kindergarten, I get sick. I have like a fever. Oh. It's like story of my life. It's like, so, and of course the first week of kindergarten, that's when all the social groups are being formed, right?
Yeah.
That's like, it's like everybody's figuring
that's
out
the settling
who
period.
Is, yeah. Like, you know, that's when your friends are making you off, like kind of getting you to like manipulating you to like,
yeah.
become, you know, I'm missing all of it. It's like, I'm sick for like 3 days. I come back after and it's like, I come in and it's like, I remember just the feeling of like, oh, this whole little universe is set up already. It's like I'm walking in. It's like I'm the new kid at school, even though like I literally just started the school like everybody else a week ago. But I missed like a really important part. And she was just like, hey, Nina, like, let's, you know, like, and I was like, she just remembered me and wanted to say hi. And I was like, okay. And then she just, we liked the same things. We liked dinosaurs and other kinds of animals and, you know, The Little Mermaid was really big at the time and whatever. This is, so we were just like, okay, but I remember that like she was really one of the only people who like even remembered that I was in the class, you know, because anyways, so not a manipulation, but I do feel like the middle school age is a really, it's like all the stories from middle school are just so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a, I mean, middle school in particular, that's a time when your identity is really solidified. Like, I've thought about that. It's like, before middle school, you're 10 and under. So it's like, you're barely a person with identity. It's just starting to emerge as like, okay, you're this kind of unique person. These are your favorite subjects, you know. This is the TV shows you're watching. Like, I remember 10 was when I started watching Doctor Who. Mm. It's like, that's when those kind of interests start really popping up. And then by the time you're 14, you're starting to actually think about realistic things you might want to do with your life. Just, it could be out there. It could be like, oh, I want to be an astronaut. But then because you want to be an astronaut, you're actually going to focus in the science. You're able to choose kind of what classes you want a little bit. At my school, you had to like determine your schedule a bit. But middle school is those middle years where it's like, who are you at 12? Like, that is such a middle age in terms of your coming to adulthood, in terms of your coming of age. And I mean, that's totally signified by, like, I mean, living in a very Jewish community. You have your bar mitzvah at 13, and it's like that, what you say in your b'nai mitzvah, what you say in your speech, all that stuff that goes into it, you're thinking about that for years. You know, you in middle school, you're starting this real process of like, okay, what clubs do I want to be in? What groups am I hanging out with? Some people are actually just mean. People who I thought were curt in elementary school are actually just kind of mean. And now we're starting to gain a greater social awareness as to who are the nice people, who are the not nice people, and where do we fit into this society, especially when, like, in the States in middle school, you know, there's a ton of elementary schools. And then they're going to start funneling in into a larger middle school. And then they'll really funnel in high school.
Yeah.
And so it's like you're kind of figuring out your place in that huge atmosphere.
It's interesting because I agree with you, but I also was thinking of almost the opposite thing, that like middle school is like basically – it's like you're going into the apocalypse of being a teenager.
Yeah.
It's like you're basically – have you ever taught that age, or have you ever like worked like as an adult then worked with kids like in that kind of age, like the grade 6, grade 7?
Not middle school. I've worked with younger, yeah, but not middle school.
So I have. This is like, okay, a thing. Like I've repeatedly taught like kind of grades 6 through 8. I've repeatedly taught, and the range, it's just a really hard time. I think Maria Montessori said something like, you know, here's all the ways that we can work with kids at all these different age groups, but like kind of like grade 6 to 8, like just put them in a field, get them to like help the community by like, you know, harvesting vegetables, let them talk to each other and let them work off the energy that they have. Like let them, like, I don't know, let them hang out outside. Like, don't, you can't teach them, basically. I think, yeah, was her like. So I think she had her own experience with teaching that age group, but I feel like the range is really big because you have kids who are 12 who are like still into Pokemon,
yeah,
still into, and then you also have the kids who are 12 who are like really into like some other stuff that you're like, you know, especially with the internet, you're like, okay,
yeah,
without a doubt, parents.
The age when kids start to become too old for their age, because, yeah, they start to get taken seriously at home. And so then some kids are being given a lot of responsibility. This is the age when, you know, some kids will leave school. It's like, this is a time when, you know, you're no longer like a child. Like, you're still a kid, of course. You're still a child. But you're not like infantile. You're starting to approach teenager years, like you said. And so you start to form some identity in and outside of school, but you're right that you're completely untenable. You're kind of you have to be put on a leash because there's a lot going on in your head that could be beyond your years.
Yeah, I think if it's a weird age because depending on, it's like a prism or something. It's like what depending on the angle, it's like, yeah, you're, it's like kids that age will play imaginary games, right?
Yeah.
But there's also kids who are like, that is so, that's for losers. Like, we, like, you know, like, I feel like grade 5, well, for me, grade 5, like, kind of grade 5, grade 6, it was like the music range was really wide too, right?
Oh, yeah. You have some prodigies back down there. I remember seeing, like, a violin player who, like, in my 5th grade classes, she was just, like, amazing.
Oh, yeah. But also the music people listen to too, right?
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I have a foreign experience with that because my dad was a radio host. And
oh,
so
okay.
I was listening to some really crazy stuff starting, like, 3rd grade, 4th grade, okay. Like, my dad was always playing like Talking Heads. His two favorite bands are the Talking Heads and the Replacements. And my mom's a big like Fleetwood Mac Beatles fan, of course. And so I grew up listening to a lot of really diverse music. And then when I moved to Chicago in 3rd grade, he got me into Illinois, the Sufjan album. And so I became a Sufjan fan in 3rd grade. And then that was also the year that Wraith Pinned to the Mist and Other Fun Games by Of Montreal was a radio hit of some Landic twins. And so then I really got into Hissing Fauna at that age. I got into Of Montreal and all of the sort of like, you know, the sort of indie revival that was happening of that time. Like I remember Young Folks by Peter, Bjorn, and John. That was a major, major song. And so I was really cracked in on the music and the and all of that stuff by fifth grade. And that's maybe why, I mean, this might be context for my middle school experience, but I was so unconfident about, you know, presenting as like a normal person in class. I was depressed. I was sad that I wore a suit to school every day.
No, stop it,
and
Maxwell.
I went to public school.
No,
and
stop.
From fifth grade to eighth grade, I wore like pretty much a three-piece suit every day. I had a vest. I had jackets. I had slacks. I would come in wearing a tie. For the listeners on the radio, Nina just reclined, grabbing at her head, shocked at this. Yes,
no, because
I had bow ties. Okay, I wore the whole thing every day. It gave me like a rubric of wear that looked good, that I knew I looked good in. Like, I remember in fourth grade, I went to my uncle's wedding, and so I had to get a suit for that, and I just loved wearing it. I was like, I don't have to worry about wearing whatever polyester track pants or whatever Under Armour shirt. Like, I can just go in a suit, and it looks good on me. And of course, people just thought I was gay. They were a little, they were a little right, but no, also and maybe a little pretentious, but I was also, you know, a huge Doctor Who fan. I was watching How I Met Your Mother. Like, I was surrounded by role models in suits, and I was like, yeah, I gotta live the suit life. And so I wore a suit every day all throughout middle school. And then I remember when I went to high school, I still only had slacks as pants. And I was like, am I going to start wearing the suits again once it gets colder? And I just didn't. I was just done with it, and I started dressing like a normal kid. I'm actually a little surprised I've never said that.
You've never told me that, and it just changes everything that I feel like I know about you, because I'm like, Maxwell was a bully? Like, and then Maxwell wore
yeah.
a suit? Like,
well, we can talk about the bully thing, too.
So
that's
cute,
separate.
Though. Can I just say that you were wearing this? That is... And maybe you just wanted
to go
to
H&M suits.
Oh my gosh. But that you wanted to go to a school with a uniform, maybe, because
no.
that you didn't. You wanted to stand out.
When I was in Chicago, I went to a school with a uniform.
And you didn't like it.
I hated it.
Yeah.
I absolutely hated
okay,
it.
What about it did you not like? Like, well, sorry, answer how you want to answer.
Well, the uniform, I don't know. It was like a polo shirt and then this particular pair of navy jeans. And it was just, I don't know. I just didn't like it. I didn't like the look of it. And you know, I wasn't comfortable in it. And I think that part of that could be because, well, here's why I say I wore the suits is because, like I said, it was a rubric outside of everyone else's.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't actually have to worry about how good what I was wearing was during the day because I understood that fundamentally I looked good in a suit and that I could – and I understood the different components that made up a decent – suit outfit.
Right.
And so I was within my own sort of range of expectations. And versus like, oh, I need to get the polo right. I need to get the pants right. I need to get all of these things really particular. I didn't have to worry about that anymore because I had my own set of expectations.
No, I mean, I'm kind of obsessed with this because
here.
I'm just getting.
I'll close the door. You can talk. Okay. I'll close the door.
No, well, you can hear me. Yeah. So, I feel like I have to rewrite like how I conceptualize Maxwell in my head just because of that information. But also, it kind of fits with other stuff that you've told me about, like you and like your dreams and stuff. But it really for me, like, what's interesting too is that. It's from this. Were you in a suit in the dream?
No, but I am wearing a button up. Like, the suit is off.
Tell me about your clothes. Your clothes are important in your dreams, Maxwell. Okay?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
What are you wearing and what is Stephanie wearing?
Stephanie's wearing normal kid stuff, wearing like a Pokemon t-shirt or something, like
nice.
Stuff that middle schoolers
Which
wear.
Which Pokemon is on there? You don't know.
Oh, I'm thinking about what's the crocodile one that stands up that's like a sand type color? It's literally Croca something.
Okay.
I wish I could remember. Sharp
okay.
teeth. And then I'm wearing, like, what I would wear at the end of the day, which is my button-up. I have a button-up on that's, like, a little unbuttoned and pajama bottoms. Because I would literally always go home and just, like, shed my... And also, okay, an important part of the suit thing is that I would get home, shed it, get into pajamas, maybe wear the button-up with a t-shirt underneath or something. And then I would go for, like, an hour-long walk. and in my pajamas and my button up. Like, I would like have to decompress from every day at school with a long walk around Philly. And then my brother, because my brother was a bunch of grades ahead of me, he would like talk about me. And so the high school kids knew me as Crazy Suit Kid. And so then I would be walking around my neighborhood and I would get stopped by these high schoolers
so
that were
rude.
Like, let me, are you the Crazy Suit Kid? And I'm like, yes. Yes. And they would take pictures with me.
Did you feel good about that or not good about
it? I felt extremely neutral about it.
Okay.
I was
extremely neutral.
Because I was, I felt extremely neutral about it because I was like, either they're making fun of me or they actually like it. Like, I always thought in my head that there was a part of like admiration. Maybe that's some ego coming through.
Probably partially.
But yeah. I always thought like people probably enjoy it because they would never do that themselves. And I did look down on like normal clothes a little bit because I was like, I'm just going to do my thing. And it doesn't seem like other people are really doing their thing, except when someone did super well dress up or something, even if it wasn't a suit or something, you know, just a really nice outfit, I'd be like, that looks great. Like, they're putting as much effort into whatever they're wearing as I am.
Okay.
Probably part of why I was always friends with girls growing up.
Right. Because that level of
intentionality. And all of that. Yeah, definitely.
Wow.
And so in the dream, I'm wearing my pajama pants with the button up.
That's so important in the dream, I feel. I just like need a minute to like metabolize some of this information. But I have a song that's about when you wake up, you're still in a dream. It's by My Bloody Valentine.
Oh, wow. Okay. I've never been a Bloody Valentine fan. So,
maybe we shouldn't listen to it.
Oh, do you think? I mean,
because it's your show.
Oh, okay. I mean, I could suggest a sleeping song.
Suggest a song.
Do you know Are You Sleeping by Harry Nilsson off his classic album, The Point? That's the album with Me and My Arrow. Me and My Arrow. And
Now I'm confused. What's the name of the song again?
Are You Sleeping? Okay. Are You Sleeping?
Yeah.
That's a great dream song.
Harry Nilsson. Okay.
Nilsson. Yeah. Nilsson.
Thank you. You don't have to bully me.
I'm not bullying. I don't know how much you know about Harry Nilsson. No. He's a 60s classic.
No, it's good. No, thank you for I have trouble spelling things. Thank you.
And when we come back, we could talk about how I was a bully, why I was a bully as a child.
Like, it's literally like we need another hour now. I don't think that Dan will let us do that, but you'll have to come back you'll have to. We didn't even get to, by the way, which we won't today, but we can keep the listeners, if we want to, in suspense about, can I say this on air? Do you remember when I was in Philadelphia and I was texting you because there was a plagiarism of a sex party? Do you remember? What are you talking about, Maxwell?
I don't remember this right now.
What are you talking about? I was, because you, okay, we're going to come back to this later. I wasn't at that party. That was not what happened. We're going to listen to some Harry Nilsson.
Context needed.
Okay.
Well, Harry Nilsson, then the ads. We'll take it through.
Listening to Dreamscapes, if you're still listening.
Are you sleeping? Can you hear me? Do you know if I am by your side? Does it matter if you hear me? When the morning comes, I'll be there by your side. And in the morning when I wake up, she may be telling me goodbye, la 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 la. And in the evening if we break up, I'm wondering why, yeah, yeah, I'm wondering why, yeah, 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 yeah. There was a time we had a time, there was a time we had a time. There was a time when you were mine. We had a time, oh what a time. There was a time when you were mine. And in the evening if we go out, night time we'll find us at the show, la 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 la. Oh, we may decide to stay inside.
sight. You never know, you never know, you never know, you never know, you never know. Are you sleeping or can you hear me? Do you know if I am by your side? Does it matter if you hear me? When the morning comes, I'll be there by your side. La 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 la.
Backwards 12th edition in Quebec City from February 13th to the 21st. Presented by SiriusXM, this major celebration of merging and alternative music will light up the capital with nearly 100 artists. Come discover your next favorite act, including Gaube, Afternoon Bike Ride, Mess, and Wizard. Full details at fuckoff.com. That is P-H-O-Q-U-E-O-F-F.com.
Good evening, dear listeners. There's a synth in the house. My name is Matt Fay, and every Wednesday at 10 p.m., I explore songs with any kinds of synthesizers in them across all genres through thematic sessions or free-for-all jams. Trust me, you'll enjoy it as I do know a thing or two about good music. Through random trivia, occasional puns, or my wacky narration, I will make your evenings better amidst this turbulent world. So, come on in. Enter my cozy abode, cuz there's a synth in the house. Join me Wednesdays 10 p.m.
Only on CJLO.
Hi, you're listening to Dreamscapes. If you're still here, we're still here with Maxwell.
Yes, you're listening Let me do it. We're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. Let me say that much.
Sorry. You're still bullying me. This might be the one, My Bloody Valentine, yeah, that you're gonna listen to. So we might play that after. What were we talking about?
Oh, we were talking about the dream, the apocalypse dream.
Yes.
And then I wanted to give you a little bit more context on me being a bully as a child in these last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Because you're like, I don't understand how you were a bully as a child. Let me tell you.
Okay.
I was born with my tongue attached to the bottom of my mouth.
Oh.
Yeah. So you're being ableist. Yeah. And no, I'm just kidding.
No, my partner had that too. Did you have to have an operation?
Yeah, I had to have it laser departed when I was 4. And okay, that's actually one of my first memories, is sitting in the back seat on the way to the operation. Luckily, I was put under, so I don't remember the pain. But I was in speech therapy pretty much until high school. Wow. I went to speech therapy once a week to try to relearn how to talk. But before that could happen, I was just, you know, I couldn't really talk. I had to, you know, talk like this to how many people. And so in preschool, I was bigger than the kids. I was one of these kids that hit the growth spurt way earlier than everyone else. And then everyone started catching up to me. Mm. And I remember I couldn't talk, but I always wanted to be first in everything. I wanted to sit in the first seat in the class. I wanted to be the first in the line. And so I would ask the kids to move for me, but they wouldn't listen. So I would pick them up. And if they started struggling, I would just throw them down.
Okay.
And so I was like a preschool wrestler.
Okay.
And I was so bad, I was picking kids up and throwing them down the stairs, because we would line up in front of the stairs. And I would run to the front and be like, I want to be in the front. And they're like, what? And I would pick them up and throw them. And so that led to me like I would not like dance around words, whatever, once I then could start to speak. Come like actual elementary school, I would say really cutting and direct things because I had just absolutely no filter. Because now that I was able to talk, I was like, I'm talking very directly.
Yeah.
I never learned how to beat around the bush that young. I never learned how to like infer something that I want. And so I would just be mean. I would just be really direct, really, you know.
But inferring is a privilege, right? Like, I do think that like people who infer come from a place of like, there's something. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's like people who speak gently and they're actually trying to be gentle, and then there's people who like infer and you're supposed to understand what they mean because they come from a privilege back, or there's some kind of like power play that's going on that makes it so that they can talk like that. I think like communicating directly is actually good. Although I guess what you're saying is
I was mean.
You're mean.
Okay. I was mean. I was a bit of a bully, and that didn't reset until I went to Chicago and I was bullied mercilessly.
Okay.
I had the life beat out of me, and so I had no friends. And so then coming back to Philly after those years, it was pretty much like a personality reset. It was like, okay, I'm going to, like, I was still a little mean, and people would tell me that I was still a little mean, but I was not like a bully. I was then at that point a quieter kid who had gone through the ringer and decided to start wearing suits. I mean, I started wearing suits within a year of returning.
Okay. And how old were you when you went back?
Oh, so
this
10.
Is, okay, yeah, so this is, yeah, okay.
10, yeah. I was there from like 7 to 10.
This just feels like a whole other side of Maxwell that, like, we'll have to, like, just take time to go into another time. I mean, I've loved talking with you about this. I don't have, like, a theory, really, for the dream. More than just, like, well, you talked about, I don't know, I mean, maybe... So, you know, sometimes people do talk about how, like, all the characters in the dream represent different facets of your own personality. And maybe in middle school, after you had this reset, you know, there's a part of you that's into the suits and the and they kind of has you're kind of developing this different persona. But maybe Stephanie took on some of the meanness that you felt like you also had, or some of the meanness that you felt that was, like, directed towards you, too.
Yeah. Or... Yeah, maybe Stephanie in that dream is like a representation of, you know, how I felt about myself or something, you know, because nobody would ever, I feel like even in the apocalypse, you would maintain some decorum in terms of being like, yeah, you're the worst person to be with right now. Like, nobody would, maybe people would say that if the world was about to end, but I don't believe Stephanie would. It would not be probably exactly like that, but it's always the same. It's always the, and I'm with you.
Wow, yeah. I have a lot more questions than I have answers for this episode, and I'm okay with that.
Okay.
We're going to do Moon Report and then go right into this song. So the moon, there's an eclipse next week.
Okay.
Are you sensitive to eclipses too? Because I know...
I feel like I might be.
Yeah, I think we talked about this the last time, because you and I... Because Jade was like... not sensitive, like, she, like, was excited about that, the eclipse that happened in April, like, when it was, like, totality,
the
and you and I were both like, I felt sick.
It like, was scary.
It made it me
was,
feel it sick.
Was,
yeah.
I was just scared. Like, yeah. I immediately understood why all the birds were freaking out. I was like, yeah, freak out. This is the time to freak out. This is some real world-ending stuff.
Yeah, apocalypse feelings.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Without a doubt, an apocalypse feeling.
So there's an eclipse next Tuesday, so I'll...
Not a total eclipse, right?
It's
just a fun little diet
just
eclipse.
Just a little one, yeah. It is not like there's no totality or anything for us. There might be in other places, though, so we have to look that up. But in Montreal, we won't get totality.
Okay.
There was something else I wanted to say to you, but I don't remember. So it just, it won't happen. But, let's listen to When You Wake, You're Still in a Dream.
Well, thank you for having me on to talk about this wonderful, joyful dream and about my, my coming of age through suits and my tongue.
I just want to say I'm so grateful for the Maxwell that we have. I am. You're just like, you're such a great person. And it's interesting to know people's backstories too.
Yeah.
Right? So, okay. Let's try to listen to this. And,
all right.
You know, maybe you'll like it. Maybe it'll be the one, My Bloody Valentine, that you like. Yeah.
Let's tune in.